If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
My name is Michael Bailey, and you're listening to the EDP Formula One podcast.
Welcome all to the EDP F1 podcast, post-Canada, post-Montreal, post-the Blues, if you like. I am Michael Bailey, as per usual, hasn't really changed, that is just me. I am joined by Perry Hamilton and David Tillier. Gents, hello.
Hello.
Evening. Are we well?
Yeah, do you mean post-Blues because of the Quebec flag being a blue cross with 4 fleur-de-lis in each corner in white?
Oh, that was one of the meanings I was aiming for.
Well,
yes.
Really?
Of course.
It is now. Okay, all right, now. All right, fair enough.
Obviously. The other one may have been all those cars stuck behind the... Oh, it's purple, really, isn't it? Red Bull now.
Yeah.
And just, you know, the feeling of ominousness that we tend to get from these things. Sebastian Vettel flying off into the distance, getting his getting his gap he needed before DRS even became an issue. Fernando Alonso said a great thing after the race. When asked about the gap to Seb, he said, "Oh, it's going to be a close season. Well, we hope it's going to be a close season." I don't even think Fernando's convinced.
It's been a bit up and down for Fernando, hasn't it, so far this year. He's got a better car than he had last year, but he's not been able to necessarily translate that into the amount of or the consistency, rather, that he managed to have last year. So, I think he's probably feeling that Seb has the better luck of the draw, as it were, at least so far, anyway.
He's looking a bit dominant, Seb, and I just wonder about the what happened in Malaysia with the front wing. I can't help thinking we'll just keep thinking about that all through the season. That was such a dodgy call and put him out of the race, and
I mean, but in all honesty, I mean, I think we discussed that near at the time. That's the decision they made. They got to move on from it. You know, you can't always look back. If wishes were fishes, the world would be an ocean. And you know, it's not. And you know, Ferrari aren't the type, are never the type to sort of look back and go, "Oh, if only." And, you know, you could say the same thing about Fernando. If only he hadn't tried to use his DRS twice after he knew it was broken the first time. I mean, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. You know, Fernando needs to learn these lessons. You know, you don't often say that about Fernando Alonso's performance. So, yeah, there are plenty of things that we can look back and rue. But I think part of the key to success for Red Bull, especially for Vettel, there are very few things that he'll look back and rue, and that's the key, is just, you know, solid, consistent and fast performance. You put all those three things together and, you know, you're looking at a 3-time world champion, not surprisingly.
Okay, am I being morose here? Because, you know, I'm almost writing off the season. It's only race 7. We've only had 7 races. Am I wrong?
It's not 2011 again. So I don't think we need to worry too much about him running away with every race. But he's always there or thereabouts. And that's the key thing here, is that Fernando has had great races and he's had some fairly shaky races. And although Seb's been off the top spot for quite a few races now, he's still been podiums, decent haul of points, you know, been up there, really. So... you know, he is the new Mr. Consistency. So it'll be, if he carries on that way, then Fernando's going to have a pretty stellar season to make sure that he gets ahead of him.
Dominant in Canada. It's the first time that Seb and Red Bull have won around Montreal.
Which is surprising, because you would think that at least by some point, I mean, you look at the fact that Webber's a race winner and he has a certain places that he likes, and you'd think between the two of them that they would have had that trophy before now. But,
it's a bit of an anomaly, really, wasn't it, with what happened last year, wasn't it, where Jensen won?
Two years ago.
Last year was Lewis Hamilton, I believe, for the checkered flag last year for McLaren.
So these things happen. Did we enjoy the race? I love the track, and even with Seb disappearing off, and that was sort of done and dusted after lap one, I still enjoyed it.
I thought it was very good.
Yeah, first 15 laps were superb. You know, really, really quite exciting, chopping and changing, loads of people making up ground, like some people losing ground. It was really, really exciting. It seemed to go a little bit stale in the middle, and then it picked up again towards the end. So it was a nicely bookended race, and there are quite a few races that have been like that in the past that I've quite enjoyed watching. But yeah, the middle wasn't particularly exciting, but then again, we didn't have the sort of traditional sort of upsets with tyres. Everyone's managed them fairly well. People were sticking to their strategies pretty well. So, you know, we didn't have any sort of topsy-turvy bits in the middle. It was all, you know, pretty much the status quo was kept.
I think in one way, the race was a disappointment. And there's only one thing for me that I found disappointing. The Wall of Champions did not claim another victory.
I don't think anyone touched it.
Sebastian hit the corner coming out of turn three, I think.
The other wall. That hasn't been named.
Yeah.
I think we tried to name it on Sunday, but
the Wall of Less Than Champions.
he says of the triple world champion.
Yeah. I think we picked worse words than that.
I think we probably did. Yeah, but I don't think you can libelling.
And
I don't think you can say that on the podcast, can we?
Yeah. Maybe it could be the Wall of Triple World Champions.
Yeah, exactly. One down.
Yeah. I like the sound of that.
If only Fernando could kiss that one, eh? Bernie seemed to suggest that the race might be not much longer for the calendar. A bit tired, he said. A bit like Silverstone a few years ago. A bit tired.
Yeah, but that's just Bernie, isn't it? You know, he knows that everybody loves calendar, and you know, the Canadians, they absolutely love that race. They, you know, they turn out and they're droves. I think it's just Bernie just trying to, you know, shake things up a little bit, and possibly, you know, he might want them to do something with their facilities, and by doing this, they may well push them into a position where they update things a bit like Silverstone. But overall, I don't think we'll lose Canada. It's one of the classics.
It'd be a strange one if they put on extra races in America only to lose another North American race, because you'd seen that would make financial sense as much.
Well, it would, but bear in mind the vastness of the continent that you're talking about. If you live in Montreal or in that Quebec area, and you like Formula One, it's actually, I mean, yeah, it's an unfortunate expense, but it's not that far to go relatively to head down to New York and New Jersey if that's where we end up having a Formula One race. And the spectacle of that in itself is going to draw people from miles and miles around. You know, so it's not actually, it's like the Buffalo Bills in the NFL play in Buffalo, New York, but then they play two, three home games a season in Toronto. And, you know, that's actually still classed as relatively close to their home ground, even though it's in a different country. Mm. So I think if Canada does get lost somehow, and I really hope it doesn't, it's one of my favourite tracks. If Canada does sort of disappear and they put another one on in North America, not just North American continent, but, you know, geographically north of United States of America, you'd still see a lot of Canadian fans make the trip down for that, I think. But I agree with DT. I think it's Bernie maybe saying, because, I mean, the track's only used that time of year. It's not used for much else throughout the rest of the year. It's very seldom used for anything other than Formula One. So it's very purpose-built for that. If they lost Formula One, it would become quite a derelict, obsolete track. So I think they'll be quite committed to doing everything they can to keeping it, but I think Bernie is going to squeeze them for all they're worth, as Bernie does, and that's what's made. Let's make no bones about it. Bernie's cutthroat nature is what's made Formula One into the ever-improving sport that it is today.
Yeah. You know, that being said, though, I never really thought that we'd lose Magny-Cours all those years ago.
When you said it, it was the first track that popped in my head was Magny-Cours,
French track, such iconography, French drivers, you know, French teams and what have you. And I exactly when you said a second ago, you know, Canada's one of the classics, and I thought to myself, yeah, but they got rid of the French Grand Prix, didn't they?
Yeah, so you never know. You never know. I mean, the thing is, the problem we've got now is the season is bouldering. I mean, next year we're going to have 21 races, they reckon, with Russia and New Jersey coming in. Bahrain's apparently going to start the season on, and they're going to bring the season forward to, I think, like the 2nd or 3rd of May, I think it is, next year. So
March. You mean March?
That's what I meant.
Close.
With a M.
May.
Yeah. But yeah, so the season's getting ever longer. We're getting more and more races. It's getting to the point where, you know, the guys that are in the pit garage can't physically do an entire season. It's going to get to the point where, are we actually going to need to have more than one team within each team?
It's like a European crew and a world crew.
Exactly. I mean, there are those things that they, you know, those sorts of separations in other sports, but, you know, F1 generally tends to be, you know, you've got to have the top people wherever you go. But if you're exhausting them, then they're not going to be the top people.
Well, it's a good point, actually, isn't it? You've got to have the right squad. I mean, when I was watching the race with my lovely fiance, I had the joy and the pleasure of joining Mr. Michael Bailey to watch the race. Wow. We watched the race together.
In the same
post basketball, yeah.
Post a quick game of basketball, mm-hmm. actually. But one of the questions that my lovely fiance posed was when they had the Lotus mess up with the jack at the back. She said, is he going to get fired now? And I thought, well, no, he's not going to lose his job, because it would actually take more money and time and effort to train someone else up to understand how smoothly that pit stop has to work. Because they all work as one unit, and they're hours and hours of practice. So if one person makes a mistake, you're not just going to send them by the wayside. So as you say, if you are going to split them in that way, you literally need double the amount of people, because you can't just chop and change and expect some person to work just as well with another team. They all need to be their own integral cogs in their own machine. And if it does go that way, then you're looking at such a large amount of money to go into it.
It would be ridiculous. It would be ridiculous for a sport that was trying to cut costs.
Exactly. And teams like Caterham and Marussia, you could almost kiss goodbye to them.
Ouch. Okay, just in engineers percentage style, please. I'd like percentage on Sebastian Vettel's likelihood of becoming world champion at the end of the season as you see it now.
77.2.
I was going to go for 77.3. How bizarre is that?
Fantastic.
It's the majority.
I think it's got to be well up there. I hope it isn't, because I think it would be easier if it was someone else that was dominating all of the while. But one thing I cannot stand in an F1 driver, and I know it's difficult for them not to have this because of the sort of surroundings that they have, is arrogance. And Vettel has come from someone I used to really like, because I thought, you know, he's quick, but he's quite a personable person. He's quite funny. He's got an interesting character about him. Now he's turning into a slightly sulky, slightly petulant child that has quite a lot of arrogance about him. Some of it is deserved, but I still don't like to see it. And that slightly moves me on to my new sort of least favourite driver in terms of from that point of view as well, is Perez. He's all of a sudden, since he's come to McLaren, got this air of arrogance around him that I don't think he's yet earned.
So would you say Vettel has earned his air of arrogance?
I think
the three-time world champion, collecting fastest laps like the notches in a bedpost.
I think he has earned a certain level of arrogance, but I still don't think that the way that he conducts himself, the way he carries himself, is befitting of a world champion in some respects.
Do you think he's?
But that's just for personal fear. I personally don't like him.
No, I can understand that. And I can see where you're coming from completely. Yeah. He does more to alienate the casual observer than he does to ingratiate the hardcore fan.
Yeah,
and I think that's an interesting way to.
Montreal was a perfect example as well, because he was getting booed again on the podium. People,
is that just a reflection of F1 fans wanting more parity?
I don't know.
Are we just bored with seeing the same person at the top? And we don't, you know, Michael says, you know, is it ominous?
Yeah.
Is he just being a bit, you know, downhearted about saying that Vettel's run away with it? We're already at race 7 looking at going, oh, is it another boring season? It's been anything but a boring season.
No, but none of the seasons so far, even 2011, have been boring seasons. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know whether it is. I mean, did people boo Michael Schumacher when he was dominant? I can't.
Here, probably after he ran Damon Hill off the track.
Yeah, I think there probably were that. Occasions, but actually, no, I don't. I see your point. Actually, I think the way Michael went about cementing his legacy was, you could say, was different. But actually, was it that much different? I mean, Red Bull weren't exactly a dominant team when Sebastian Vettel came into it. They worked together, they created the car, and they've created an absolute juggernaut of championships. Michael Schumacher was the same thing. Ferrari was struggling when Michael Schumacher went to them. They were not a championship-winning team and hadn't been for a long time. Mm. And Schumacher rode it and slowly built it up and built it up until a level of seven.
Yeah, the difference you've got now, though, is that there is parity between the teams, because although Red Bull have consistently managed to achieve that dominance, they haven't had necessarily the ability to run away with it quite so much all of the time. You know, back when Ferrari's day, they had the best tyres, they had more in-season testing, they could had much more freedom to create this and that and the other, and they could just throw tons of money at it, and it worked, and they had the ability to just elevate themselves above people, whereas Red Bull have done it just by being good and not making mistakes, going back to what we were talking about.
And hiring Adrian Newey.
Yeah, hiring Adrian Newey. But also, they don't make silly mistakes. Like, Ferrari makes silly mistakes with Alonso. And I think I saw another sort of silly mistake in the 2011 race that I watched over the weekend from Canada. You know, they made silly judgment calls and things. But Red Bull don't seem to, on the whole, they don't make these big mistakes. They are very professional, very clinical, very good at what they're doing. You kind of have to take your hat off to them in their ability to do that.
It is time for this. That's right. Mr. DT's little pit stop noises there, bringing forward the EDP F1 pit stops. Let's start at Lotus, who have had a difficult couple of races. Kimi has kept up his points finishing record, or equally, he's now equaled, hasn't he, Michael Schumacher's most consecutive points finishes, although Schumi did it with sixth place offering points. Is that right? And Kimi's doing it with 10, down to 10. Something like that. But not really what Lotus want or need. Is this just a regression to the mean almost, or is there a development issue here that's kind of dogged Enstone in the past?
No, I just think that the Red Bull and the Ferrari are the clear favourites in terms of their cars at the moment. I think they are behind in development. Anyone who is slower than anyone in front of them is behind in development. But I don't think they're necessarily moving backwards. I just don't think they're moving forwards as quickly as the other guys are able to do. Maybe they don't have the platform for it. But their car, fundamentally, is not bad. You know, I reckon we'll see them on the top step again before the end of the year. But I don't think they're going to be worrying Red Bull and Ferrari too much.
Okay, 3 points for Kimi in the last two races.
Yeah, it's still points. It's still.
Are they enough for what he wants to achieve though this year?
But one point can make the difference. Yeah.
Only if it's accompanied by 200 others.
The way he won his world championship in 2007 was, he wasn't challenging for it in the early stages. And I think at one point Felipe Massa was even ahead of him in 2007. Mm.
And the way the scoring system is set up now, all it takes is for Red Bull to hit, two silly mistakes, or someone even like Grosjean to go up the back of Vettel, as we know he's wont to do. We know there are a couple of drivers out there that
Renault have done it before in the past.
Absolute risk takers.
Oh my god!
And that just are a little bit make you a little bit edgy when overtaking. And if Seb has a bad qualifying, he's stuck behind them. Who knows what could happen? Take Seb out of the race, Kimi gets two wins, it's 50 points. It's 50 points, from two races. And if Seb DNFs both of them, suddenly it's a whole different ball game. The problem is, as we discussed earlier, Red Bull are calm, collected, clinical. And they rarely make those kinds of mistakes. And even when they do, they always just seem to come off so lucky. I mean, Seb runs wide at, for, you know, the first corner and just finds a nice little route off and rejoins, and no problem at all.
He went for an excursion at one point.
Yeah, exactly. He's battling with Hamilton, and it looked for all the world like Hamilton clipped his left rear tyre. He didn't, you know, it was fine. And
he hit the wall.
No damage at all. So is it a testament to how well built their cars are, or are they just riding some kind of luck machine? Who knows? who knows?
Paul de Resta, and Force India in general have looked very good on these kind of tracks. Paul de Resta had a bit of a whinge, didn't he, after qualifying? He wasn't best happy with the way his team dealt with it for the second race running, but showed some very good stuff
in
the race.
You've got to level some accusation at the team's door, but at the end of the day, the person that gets the car into Q2 and up the field is the driver. You've got to do the best with what you've got, and at the time he didn't nail the lap, you know, and he was caught out. It happens to people. It
doesn't happen very often that a driver comes out and has a go at his team.
No, exactly. I think Paul, I like Paul, but he's not necessarily the most chipper chap on the grid, and he can be quite sort of sober in a way, and I think he gets, you know, he wants to do well, and he gets frustrated when things don't necessarily go his way, and that's probably the mark of a pretty good driver, I think, to be honest. I think that's you know why he's done very well up until his Formula One career and continues to do pretty well since he's been in it.
He's a young driver. He's full of potential. He's just venting at the fact that it's not been got right for a long time. And Sutil coming in and being very strong at the beginning of the season after not having a drive last year can't have helped his situation. He must have genuinely thought, when the seat stayed open at Force India for so long, that they're looking for a young, fresh talent to come in and quite clearly back up Paul de Resta and be the second driver. Sai Sutil, who's got experience with the team, he's established with the team, he's an established driver. You must have, you know, and then for him to come in and do so well, I can't imagine that it sat too well with Paul. So maybe it's just a bit of a vent, but acquitted himself brilliantly in the race.
He did indeed. Caterham had a pretty shocking weekend, certainly race-wise. I felt a bit for Van der Gaard. He kind of got done for Nico Hülkenberg's collision as he was lapping him. Yeah, he kind of, Nico just turned in too soon, didn't he? I mean, how far off is a driver supposed to back?
Yeah, I can't, it's a bit cloudy remembering this one, but I do remember thinking, well, to be honest, Nico just came across him anyway, you know, he was not, you know, Van der Gaard was off the racing line, I think. And
I wonder if the penalty was sort of for that, but off the back of what happened to Webber, where Guido was a little bit naughty and he just cut him up when he was supposed to be letting Webber through under blue flags. I'd just do away with blue flags. You know, just make everyone have to earn the right to pass everyone, whether it's lapped or full position. Just forget it. Just do it.
In theory, I suppose it makes sense, because in theory, if you're a car that's being lapped, you shouldn't have the speed to hold up the car behind you if you're being lapped.
Exactly.
You know, Vettel shouldn't be having to battle with a Caterham, but likewise, I see what you're saying. I don't necessarily agree with it to that extent, but I certainly think that if cars that are going to be lapped are battling, they should certainly be left alone. So if you're within the DRS zone, or it's quite clear that you're encroaching on another car, then your first priority is your place in the race. Mm. And your second priority should be that of what's going on behind you.
Yeah.
And if they want to get involved and try and get past you while you're trying to battle, then that's their business. But, you know, if you're a car and you're going down a straight on your own and you've had to pit for a new nose and there's no one else around you, get out of the way. It's not going
to
cause you
I just think when someone's expecting someone to move over and the other guy thinks he has to move over and he's looking behind him, it just creates a sort of, oh, are you going? Are you first? Or have you moved over enough? And it's just...
Yeah, I mean, there are very specific rules on how this is dealt with in the rules and the regulations and the way that drivers conduct themselves. They know what they're supposed to do, so that I think the driver following will expect them to do one thing, and usually when they don't do that, that's when problems arrive. But I think, you going back to what you said about let's get rid of blue flags, I think, okay, yeah, fair enough, let's get rid of blue flags. Let's make it so that they're not allowed to battle with the car that's trying to lap them, but at the same time they don't have to bend over and take it, if you know what I mean.
Eloquently put, DZ.
You know,
choice phrasing on the podcast.
you know, that's, I think that would be a better way of doing it. You know, it would be pointless for a lot of these drivers to battle with someone trying to get past them, because they're only going to lose time.
Yeah.
You know, you don't become faster by fighting with someone through the corners. You know, we all know that. We all know that people who are scrapping with each other generally tend to be a little bit off the pace of the people who aren't, which is why you then get, you know, second and first might be scrapping, and you get third place all cruise up behind them, and then they make it a more interesting thing. You know, so that, I think, could work quite nicely.
We should just say, I'm sure our thoughts and are with the marshal who died in Montreal. It sort of broke after the race, really, that one of the marshals had been killed in a horrible accident, sort of once the teams had left. And rare incidents, I think the third marshal to die since 2001. Well, that's still probably more than anyone would hope for. Mercedes. Lewis has got things on his mind again, apparently. He's in a bit of a grump, as was apparent by his sort of one-word answers for most of the later weekend. He didn't say what it was that was on his mind. A quick straw poll, what do you think? I wondered if it was maybe Nicola is off to do X Factor this year.
Do you mean Nicole?
Nicole, is it?
Jesus.
Nicola? Shirtswinger?
Yeah, Nicole Scherzinger, yeah.
Yes, that's it. Nicola Scherzinger.
You obviously don't watch TMZ.
No.
Okay. Right.
I mean, I think it's hard to say what's on Lewis's mind. I think he should be quite happy with the weekend. I think he did a damn good job, to be honest. You know, considering how dominant they have been on the Saturdays and then how awful they've been on the Sundays.
Oh yeah, they've gone backwards in the race many times.
You know, he managed to hold on to, you know, a good position. You know, yeah, he lost out to Fernando ultimately, but still brought it home on the podium, didn't he? So that's a good result for them.
Out-qualified Nico and performed him in the race. Now, we were talking about Tyregate, as it's now officially called, a couple of weeks ago, and we sort of said, oh, it's probably not really anything. But is it now a bit more of something?
Something I'm sick of hearing about, to be honest. It's all they talked about during the coverage over the weekend. And as a fan, I don't care. I genuinely don't care. It just seems so asinine, in a way. And I, you know, fair enough, go off and have your tribunal, but don't talk about it all the time. We want to talk about racing.
Yeah.
We're fans of racing, you know. And it's nice to have a little bit of politics in there, and it's nice to have a little bit of gossip and intrigue.
But once you've mentioned it once, you know, that's job done, isn't it? You've passed across the information. I'll make my own mind up. I'll then deal with that as necessary.
June the 20th is the tribunal, so it'll be the 10 days before Silverstone. Just quickly, what do we think?
Mercedes will get away with it. When I say get away with it, I mean they will be found that they didn't really do anything wrong and they didn't really gain anything by it.
Yeah.
And that's how I see it from my point of view.
Do you see that because they genuinely haven't done anything wrong, or do you see it because there will be a little bit of behind closed doors lobbying, and you look at the amount of investment that Mercedes as a company has in Formula One, the amount of teams that are Mercedes powered, and the name, the clout that comes with the name Mercedes and the silver arrows in Formula One? Do you think it would be, if we're going to make an example of a team, it can't be this team? Do you know?
No, I think it's purely for the fact that Mercedes, well, Pirelli to start with, have a clause in their contract that says that they can pick at their discretion a team to do a tyre test during the season. And it could be a 1,000-kilometre test. They asked Mercedes. Mercedes asked the FIA. The FIA said yes. That doesn't seem... That seems...
It seems like every box has been ticked.
Isn't the issue, though, that they used this year's car?
But if they asked them and they said yes, you know, at the end of the day, if the FIA wanted to stop them from doing it, then they should have been a little bit more clear, or they should have stopped them from doing it before they actually did it. It's not like they did it behind closed doors. It's not like they tried to be all cloak and dagger about it. They, you know, the FIA and now the only reason that they're doing conducting this whole charade is because the media and the other teams are kind of pushing them to do it. But actually, in reality, the FIA have...
Well, surely the FIA are in as much of a muddle as anyone else,
exactly.
By the fact that they said something would be okay, and now they're having to almost backtrack.
And because they're the governing body, even if Mercedes were in the wrong, if they told them that they could do it, then surely Mercedes are not at fault. That's the way I see things. You know, And now it clears it up. Mercedes haven't, clearly haven't gained anything from it. You know, they wouldn't have been able to put any different parts on it. They've already said that Pirelli want the same car from start to finish, so they want a consistent car all the way through. They don't know what tyres are going on it. So, you know, they're testing at a track that they're not going to race at again this year. I don't see where the benefit really is. You know, if there is a benefit, it's going to be so marginal that it doesn't really make a difference. You know, they're not a title contender, so...
It was interesting that Christian Horner suggested that in Monaco they switched the back tyres, I think, because they realised that that would mean they would go further. And they said that's the first time they've done it, as if it was something they'd suddenly learned from Spain. So obviously Christian Horner thinks that they learned something from the test that they didn't know before. But they could have learned that anyway. Okay then, gents, here we go. We need to your nominees for all of the things of the weekend. First up, driver and goat, as was revealed a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, goat of the week. Yeah.
Goat of the week. So, driver of the week first.
Paul de Resta.
Seconded.
Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
Not Jean-Éric Vergne?
Nope.
No, because Jeff was already in the top 10.
Yep.
And he...
Which I suppose... Because he was great in qualifying.
Because I suppose it was, yeah.
Whereas Paul de Resta was rubbish, as you've said earlier.
No, but I don't think we've ever seen anyone go that long and that strong on those tyres.
Yeah, that...
You know,
yeah, exactly.
that was incredible. And that's not just the car, that's the driver as well. And
50-something laps, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it's easy, as I said, you know, he's a young, ambitious, talented guy. Would have been very easy for him to be that far down the grid and to get snatchy and to mess up and go off. And he didn't. He displayed veteran patience and poise. So, yeah, I'm with you, DT. It goes to PDR for me.
De Resta gets it. If he keeps this up, he'll get a big drive to, I don't know, McLaren.
Yeah, maybe, hopefully.
We'll come on to that, I'm sure. Goat of the weekend. Oh, actually, speaking of which.
It's got to be the Bottas, hasn't it? I mean,
starting
on the second row of the grid and you're ending up... Where did he end up?
I read his quote.
14.
His quotes were basically, I could have done nothing else. The team could have done nothing else. No one could have done anything else because the car just did not have the pace.
No, I think...
Is that a bit of a cop-out?
I think if it was a normal weekend, he probably would have started 14th and finished 14th. Yeah. And no one would have said anything about it. You know, they were just there at the right time, on the right tyres, and had them banging the right lap in changeable conditions on a Saturday. That's why wet or damp Saturdays are so fun and interesting, because you get people out of position. Yeah. You know, I think goat of the weekend, it's a hard one to think. Just because the goat bit is throwing me a little bit.
The rear jack man for Lotus's pit crew.
I just think McLaren...
Well, just in general.
I would say especially Jensen for completely ballsing up in Q2.
Oh, yeah.
That he didn't cross the line. And I mean, you could say he backed out because he didn't think it would be quick.
But see, the thing is...
Then you'd pit.
But then you'd pit, you wouldn't go around
the one argument that you have for that is that he backed off, right, so that he would have a bit of space to get through. But who's the only person in that situation that doesn't have a countdown timer to when the thing finishes?
Yeah.
Jensen.
Yeah.
So his team should be saying, you know, you need to get a hurry on. But they misjudged it, you know.
It's just all the time, and it's always McLaren. It's ridiculous.
They are atrocious. They are a shambles this year.
Well, the MP428 was effectively a goat with four wheels.
It's really difficult, because, as we all know, I'm a big Jensen Button fan. I'm a fairly big McLaren fan. But I'm finding it really difficult at the moment. You know, Perez is annoying me, something chronic. You know, and they've got their performance is poor at best. But there we go.
I can't help but feel that the whole of the grid would just be uplifted by the return of Kimi Kobayashi.
We'll save that one for another day.
Well, we were talking over the weekend that now that he's got a Ferrari test drive, we'd like to see him partnering Fernando Alonso.
Well, that might not be far off.
And my flatmate, little shout out to him, he's a massive Alonso fan. I mean, a humongous Alonso fan, and he thinks that Alonso would be thrashed by the Cobb.
Oh,
yeah, he loves the
Cobb.
Not
a Ferrari, he wouldn't be. Team
of the week again. I'm quite tempted to go for Force India. Because they managed to get both their cars in the top 10, you know, and they've done particularly well. I'll probably leave it at that, actually. Mm. I'd say Force India. They impressed this weekend.
Yeah, share the honours with Force India and Toro Rosso, I think.
Okay, yeah, I'll go along there. I mean, Mercedes and Red Bull both had pretty healthy points totals or scores.
Yeah, but you kind of, you know...
Red Bull do get the honorary shout for never having won before and to bring, you know, the two cars home in the top four.
Got a decent lead in the Constructors' Championship.
Yeah, they do.
But it's like we expect all of that. You know, there's nothing out of the ordinary. And what we're looking for as fans and as pundits, I suppose you can call ourselves pundits.
You can call yourself a pundit.
Is something that's a little bit out of the ordinary. Something that's, you know, people that are elevating themselves to a higher level. And that's why Force India and Toro Rosso get my vote.
Yeah. That's fine by me. Highlight.
I loved the battle between Lewis and Alonso for second and third place. I thought that was brilliant, especially towards the end of the race. As DT said, you know, the opening was really strong and the finish was strong as well, but just that...
Just let me drive, Andy.
Yeah, just let me, you know, just let me do it, let him fight. And you know Fernando and Lewis have a lot of respect for each other. Not the greatest of teammates, but they had a lot of respect for each other on the track, and that was a good battle. That was a good fight. And for me, that was a real highlight, just watching those two go at it.
Do you know what? I can't honestly think of one.
Oh, dear.
I genuinely can't. I had one during the race, and I thought, I'm going to bank this one. This is going to be a highlight, I think, and if nothing comes along that's better than this, I'll definitely talk about it.
There was an outstanding move by Kimi as well, wasn't there?
It was in the first.
That was a good
start,
that. Yeah, very good.
Yeah, an outstanding overtake by Kimi Räikkönen.
So my highlight was something
that you can't remember.
Something in the race. Yeah.
Wonderful.
It must have been a real highlight to stick around in your mind. I've said it before, guys, and I'll say it again. We should make notes. Right?
All right then. Well, thanks, gents, for that. We will come back soon with a preview of the British Grand Prix at Silverstone. It might be the first of a double preview header. Haven't quite decided yet. We'll leave that into the planning banks. Get in touch with us on Twitter if you want. We'll be back with a preview, as I said, for Britain, as it's called, here on my list. Twitter, get hold of us at EDPF1. You can get hold of me at Michael J. Bailey. Ped is
at PedHD56.
And DT is
at Dave Tillier.
Or you can check out your website.
www.ipiston.co.uk.
Which has got all kinds of car stuff. That's pretty much the tagline, isn't it?
All kinds of car stuff.
I think actually said the tagline is currently positively passionate about performance, which is.
Very alliterative.
Somewhat cheesy.
Yeah, but it works.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll go with that.
All right then, we'll be back soon. Until then, goodbye.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.